The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. It was a weekend in which I'm sitting yesterday at the stadium, and about the only cheers other than Carson Palmer at halftime were for Larry Fitzgerald, and the Cardinals just keep losing games. They just keep losing games. They're not good. And so the problem is if I sit here on September 30th and say, boy, they're not good, and I sit here on November 1st and say, wow, they're not good, they're just in this vicious cycle of not being good. And so eventually, like I saw Kent decided to go after, and he's done it in the past, but he decided to go after Steve Keim today. So eventually Michael's got to do something because this is Michael's mess. The Cardinals are a mess. They're in that space of usually how it works. You make a change with the coach and you bring in a new quarterback and things aren't good early because they don't play these guys in August, which I always rant about. And then they come out and they show a little bit of something the first few weeks. And then they just kind of spiral into this is who we are. We're not good. And you have all these players that are either trying to stay healthy, make it through the season, play for another contract, fight through injury. You have a coaching staff that's worried about their future and their mortgages. You have a first-year coach who's never been in this league before that's trying to figure out hash marks, from my opinion. You just have a lot of things that are working against you. And so I think while Cincinnati is next up for the Cardinals, and then they play Atlanta, there's going to be nobody at that Atlanta game, by the way. Like, Eric, when the Cardinals play Cleveland in December, I joke about when it's like a Browns convention or a Bears convention. When the Steelers come to the Valley, and it doesn't matter if Pittsburgh stinks, it doesn't matter if Pittsburgh is any good or not. When we have those games later in the year, they are going to be essentially home games for those teams. Yesterday, it wasn't that bad. There weren't that many Seahawks fans there. The fact that I'm even talking about fans versus what happened on the field tells you where we are. Because I can sit here and say, I actually saw a few things I liked yesterday. I did. And it wasn't the food in the buffet line. I liked how they used David Johnson a little bit more yesterday. I liked how there were some things on the offensive side of the football that resembled a balance. I don't like the fact that they have zero interceptions through 4 weeks. Zero. And all I get is, well, when Patrick Peterson comes back, you shouldn't be that thin. I don't like the fact that tight ends continue to lead in fantasy. In fact, we're going to have Fabiano with us. It's our Monday get-together with Michael. He's going to be with us at 10:50 this morning. NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst, our weekly segment from the NFL Network on fantasy. And we have to talk to him about how great the tight ends are on teams that are playing against the Arizona Cardinals. We just have to. And so the takeaways there aren't fun. C.J. Holmes is going to be with us here in a little bit at 10:35. C.J. from The Athletic, U of A insider. You may not be buying into the U of A. I don't think a lot of people are. But I think if you look at where Kevin Sumlin was out on the islands as to where they are now, they are atop the Pac-12 South. Yes, they haven't played anybody. If you consider UCLA somebody, you're just kidding yourselves. And they play at Colorado this week. Is Colorado really the best team in the Pac-12 South? We will talk with C.J. Holmes about the health of Khalil Tate and other stuff. My weekend was filled with fun and frivolity. On Friday night, went to a high school game. One of the top players in the state ended up getting suspended because he went and helped another player at a workout facility show some stance, the idiocy of some of the rules that happen on the high school space. I just didn't know that they existed. I got back into this high school world, being a high school football dad, about 4 months ago. And so far, I've seen just lunacy, just things that are, you've got to be kidding me, this is going on. The crazy parent side of things. More than ever, the crazy parents are out. Players that think they're all that and they're not. So Friday night was filled with that, and then the Arizona State game. I actually walked out on the high school game at like the, I don't know, middle of the first quarter because I needed to see ASU. And the way that ASU played, I'll get into that a little bit later on in the show as well. Saturday was, I just had to have a break. I don't know about you guys. Wednesdays, I'm in this high school space being a high school football dad because freshmen play on Wednesday nights. Thursday nights, you have NFL football. Friday nights, you had both college and high school. Saturdays, you have college all day. Sunday, you have the NFL. And tonight, because I have James Conner, I need to watch the Steelers and the Bengals. So it's full force football for me. And I didn't see much good football yesterday. Guys, I don't know. The Cardinals have one win in their last 11 home games, 12 home games, 1-10-1, okay? One win, 10 losses, one tie in their last 12 home games. I don't know when we're going to see, if you can't win against Cincinnati or Atlanta in the next 2 weeks, if you can't make progress in the next 2 weeks, I don't know when we're going to see a victory. The 49ers are undefeated. Now, sure, they've already gone through their bye week, and they've played some teams that aren't very good, or they found ways to win games. But if you look at the NFC West and how Seattle basically pushed around the Cardinal defense yesterday, they ran for over 100 yards. Russell Wilson was sacked four times. But I didn't really feel like the game was ever really in doubt. You can make the argument that if the Cardinals at 20-10 with about 5.5, 6 minutes to go in the game could just get a stop on defense, well, guess what? They didn't. You can make the argument that if the Cardinals didn't have to burn a timeout with like 14 minutes to go in the third quarter because there was an injured player, Corey Peters, on the field, and the guy that was supposed to sub out for him didn't know if he should go in or not. So the Cardinals had to burn a timeout because the guy didn't know if he was supposed to be in or not in the third quarter. That's a sign of a bad team. When you have a kicker that misses two field goals and he's been consistent, it may have been the change in holder because Andy Lee was hurt. That's a sign of a bad team. When you have a penalty late in the game for retaliation, one of the dumbest things that I've seen out of this team, that's a sign of bad team. So there are lots of signs of bad teams. Now, I'm not going to go all negative today. Again, I said earlier, I saw a few things I liked, a little bit of progress. You can't play the short game on this deal and just every week say, wow, this team blows. Because Kyler Murray, it's not Josh Rosen. Kyler Murray's going to be here a while. So the first metric is he getting any better? I think now the term skittish was being used yesterday in the press box. I would agree with that. And it makes sense. You know, I joke about his life insurance policy needing to be paid up. And speaking of that, we're brought to you by Sagicor Now. Appreciate Sagicor and their support with us. Protect what matters most. And you've got to do that with life insurance, whether it's running for your life on the football field, as I joke about. But it's no joke about what happens to you off of the field. It's no joke about what happens to you away from work or on your way home today. If something were to happen to you, would everything be handled? Would everything be protected the way that you would want? And Sagicor can do that for you. All you have to do is log on and get your free quote. There's not going to be people there saying, we need a vial of this and a vial of that today. Okay? Or maybe not at all. But just log on, get your free quote at Sagicor. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. I do have to talk about Larry Fitzgerald, and just when I think I've seen it all, I see more that I can't believe that I'm witnessing, and I will do that on the other side. Then CJ Holmes and Michael Fabiano. Also today, there's news out in California that I think you better be aware of if you're in Arizona State or Arizona or a college fan in general about likeness and paying players for their likeness. It's going to happen in California. It was pushed through earlier today. It's a game changer. It really is. We'll get into that on the other side too. I'm Brad Sussmat. Welcome back. We will talk with CJ Holmes from The Athletic coming up in about 14 minutes and then Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network. On a Monday, a day after the Cardinals end up losing. Later today, Cliff Kingsbury will meet with the media. I am concerned about Christian Kirk. I don't know if you saw that late in the injury that it looked like he sustained, but it did not look pretty. Eric was out. You went to the Nebraska. Why would you go all the way to Nebraska to watch them get boat raced by Ohio State?
Well, I didn't necessarily go for the game. I went for the company, and there happened to be a great game on paper. And well, and then the game started, and yeah, well.
Were there more? This game was in Nebraska, in Lincoln.
Yep.
So more Ohio State fans than Husker fans?
No.
That's not how it works there?
85-15 Nebraska fans.
And it didn't matter. The final score was like
48-14, I believe. The great thing, Brad, that I just love about going to Nebraska football games – it was 38-0 like midway through the third quarter, and the stadium was still probably 90% full.
Why?
Because Nebraska just loves their football, and they just love the Huskers.
They love getting crushed.
They got crushed.
Are they getting better? I know it's a hard question after Ohio State, but because they've been bad for a while now.
So because we just had to listen to the postgame show on the way home because it's overreaction Saturday night.
I can only imagine. Can only imagine in Lincoln what that's like.
The narrative was Nebraska should worry about beating the Minnesotas and the Northwesterns.
Minnesota's undefeated. How's that?
And not really concern themselves with the Ohio States and the Michigan States and the Wisconsins and the Iowas, I thought was a very astute comment.
So they should be happy going to El Paso.
Yeah, considering they didn't go to a bowl last year.
They should be thrilled going to Chase Field.
Yep.
All right.
It's always a fun trip going back there.
Do they have players that are interesting to you?
Nebraska?
Yeah.
Well, they have a couple since I've known them since they're in high school. So
Bull Gates.
Yeah. And Javon Buda-Wright, who went to Hamilton.
Yeah.
Who is about as tall as you.
Yeah.
The great thing about seeing those guys, and you can attest to this. So I last saw Noah probably in May, and now his arms are the size of my leg.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he has a butt. Yeah. And he looks like – he doesn't look 18. He looks like he's like 22.
Yeah, of course, ASU fans, if you say Noah Pola Gates, they get all worked up. They get all bent out of shape.
Yeah, well,
all excitable.
You can only pick one school.
I felt like – so I'm going to go back on an argument you and I – we had a disagreement last week, not an argument. The ACC is not good. I'm going to go back to that, and I think the Pac-12 is better again.
It might be. I think Clemson's going to lose a game.
I do, too.
I don't know where.
I think Alabama's as good. I don't think – look, Auburn's sitting here undefeated, and the teams that they've beat
– yep.
Give me a better resume so far.
I think Ohio State's got a chance to win it all, too. Their defense is just so much better.
Yeah. Did you get a pass to go down the field? I'm just wondering, eyeball test on what that looks like.
We went down the field after the game, but we didn't go down during
the game. I'm just wondering what it looks like to walk around Ohio State, because I've seen, it's trees.
Well, we were in Nebraska. The game was at Nebraska.
It was at Nebraska, but if you see the Ohio State players.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they're all – I mean, well, the whole team is loaded just with NFL guys anyway, so.
Because, I'm watching the games on Saturday, and I watched North Carolina-Clemson, and it wasn't like – I don't know. Sunshine looks bored at quarterback at Clemson.
A little bit.
Does it looks like, yeah, okay, can I get to the NFL now? Can I just get through this? And North Carolina, the stadium is half filled, and they almost knock off Clemson.
Right. Not really sure what Mac Brown was thinking, but that's okay. I mean, I guess you're going to go for it, but there's still like a minute 20 left in the game, so you might as well just tie it because Clemson had plenty of time to go down and kick a field goal anyway.
Virginia's not good compared to Notre Dame.
Virginia's pretty good.
They're pretty good, but they're not. Are they mid-level Pac-12?
They're not elite.
No. Are they better than Cal? Are they better than Washington? Are they better than Oregon? Are they better than USC? I don't think so. Utah. I watched a lot of that Utah-Washington State game because the U of A game was hard to watch.
It was a hard watch,
and both those teams to me look like okay. They're better than some of the bottom feeders of the ACC. So,
just like you and I argued, debated, discussed.
Yeah.
And then 20 minutes later, Brock Heward basically came on with you and said, you and I are both right. Yes, it's very agreeable. It's very deep in the middle of the conference. It's very deep.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no alpha.
No.
You were right in what you said, and I was right in what I said.
Would you be surprised if the ASU-U of A game had any relevance in the Pac-12 South? I would not be.
I don't think U of A is going to be there in the end. I think ASU has a chance to be there in the end.
But by relevance, meaning if U of A beats them, it's going to mean something.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I think so. And yeah. I don't think it's out of the realm that ASU goes up to Salt Lake City and beats Utah. I mean, ASU has proven they can beat good teams on the road. I was pretty impressed. Yes, Cal lost their quarterback, but that's a Cal problem. That's not an ASU problem. So,
yeah, I'm bullish on where ASU is. I think U of A is just kind of meandering along. This will tell a lot this week against Colorado. You go to Colorado and you win, and Chenault's supposed to play.
Yep.
So if
they're coming off a bye.
They're coming off a bye. And if U of A goes up there and wins, then the stuff of, well, they haven't really beat anybody. Well, now you have to throw that out the window.
Yep, you do.
So I got to talk here about what happened this morning in California. I'll get into Fitz. So Governor Gavin Newsom, and I'm reading from the New York Times. This story just came out about 20 minutes ago. Governor Gavin Newsom of California signed into law a plan to allow college athletes to strike endorsement deals today, intensifying the legal and political clashes that could ultimately transform the economics of college sports. If the law survives any court challenges, the business of sports would change within a few years for public and private universities in California. So think about this. Every single student in the university can market their name, image, and likeness. They can go and get a YouTube channel, and they can monetize it, the governor said today with the New York Times. The only group that can't are athletes. Why is that? The measure, he said, was a big move to expose the farce and to challenge a system that is outsized in its capacity to push back. His decision, though, backed by vast support from legislature, was the subject of anxious anticipation from the NCAA today. They have yet to respond today. In a statement on Monday, and actually I'm just updating this, they just did respond. In a statement on Monday, the NCAA, which had warned that it considered the measure unconstitutional, said that it would consider next steps in California and that a patchwork of different laws from different states will make it unattainable, will make unattainable the goal of providing a fair and level playing field. So here's the thing, guys. Those of you that like to go to message boards and get all excited about how great ASU is, or U of A, in U of A in basketball and ASU in football, and I think ASU is starting to figure it out in basketball with Bobby. But if you are Jaden Daniels, if you're Arizona State and you're out in the front yard, you pull up in the car, it's recruiting season, and you're Herm Edwards and you're at Jaden Daniels' house, and you walk in and you say you need to come here and we're going to give you this Harvard of the West education and we're going to give you everything that nobody else can give you. And then he's going to say, oh, wait a minute. And then watch Clay Helton or whoever's next, Urban Meyer, whoever's the next coach of USC, because Clay's probably going to get fired. Whoever the next coach is going to sit down with Jaden Daniels or whoever the next great quarterback is in California and say, that's great. You just saw, we saw Coach Edwards walking out. Yeah, they're really good people over there at Arizona State. So if you come here to USC, we're going to put you on billboards and you're going to get a percentage of each jersey that is sold. When you walk into the ASU game, their next home game is against Washington State a week from Saturday. It's a 12:30 kick, a day game. Walk in there and just see the numbers of jerseys that are being worn by fans of players past and present. And a lot of them will be 42 jerseys for the late Pat Tillman, rightly so. Some will be 16s for Jake Plummer. But there's no revenue there to the players at Arizona State or Arizona being offered or in place. This would be in place so Stanford, Cal, UCLA, USC, San Diego State, Cal Poly, Sacramento State, Fresno State, even the leftovers, Sac State, could say, you know what? You can come here and be a Green Hornet. I think they're the Green Hornets or the Hornets. And you can make some money off of a jersey. You go to Fresno State, a team that beat ASU soundly last December in their bowl game up in Vegas. Come here to the Raisin Capital of the world and you can make money off of your likeness. And you can't do that at Arizona State. You cannot do that at Arizona. The school said the law would put their athletes in danger of being barred from routine competitions and showcase events like the college football playoff and the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournaments made for TV moments that help some universities log more than $100 million each in annual athletic revenue. So, yeah, that brings up the next step in all of this. So you're Charlie Turner Thorne, and you have a nice women's basketball program. In fact, you probably have one of the top 20 women's basketball programs in the nation. But you need a little bit more money on your bottom line, and Ray Anderson is up against it. And he can't give it to you. And so if you're the basketball coach at UCLA or USC, well, all of a sudden you have a new revenue stream that's coming in. Hey, man, we're selling your jerseys. We could take a little bit of this, a little bit of that. A better example would be the next James Harden. Why would James Harden leave California, where he can make money at 18 years of age off of his jersey, to come to Arizona State to play basketball? Why would he do that? Why would DeAndre Ayton, who played 1 year at U of A, why would he even leave Balboa Prep in San Diego and make the journey through the prep schools here that he did? Why would he do that? Marvin Bagley, why would you go all the way to Duke when you could just stay in your own backyard and make boatloads of cash as an 18-year-old off of your likeness? Do you see where I'm going with this? And it's in all sports. So where does Title IX come down in all this? Gender equity. Hey, we got basketball players over here that are making money off their jerseys. Yeah, it's the male players. Well, the female players deserve that. Well, maybe they're not as good. And people don't like to hear that in this day and age. A wrestling program at Arizona State that is terrific and has players that could go and wrestle in the Olympic Games, which they do, versus, you know what, I'll just go to USC and I'll make some money right here. So this is the tip of the iceberg today. The NCAA said moments ago, quote, it agrees changes are needed. We better come up with something here. Agrees changes are needed to continue to support student athletes, but improvement needs to happen on a national level through the NCAA's rules-making process, not having it put into California law. NCAA, and I'll get to a break after this. The NCAA also today said that the California law already is creating confusion for current and future student athletes, coaches, administrators, and campuses, not just in California. Let me cut through what that means. It already means that there are coaches out there going to the sophomores and juniors saying, hey, when you're going through the process, you can make money on your likeness here. That's already happening. That's already happening. So California has a huge leg up today. Now, are there going to be changes to this? Sure there are. Sure there are. This is the tip of the iceberg on this. And I actually say good for California. I do. Players, when I hear this, well, you know, they get marketed through their college and then they get to go to the NFL and the games that they're on ESPN. And yet, how often do I talk to those players that are barely able to get by? How often do I hear that? All the stinking time. CJ Holmes from The Athletic is next. I'm Brad Sismat. So I think a very fair question to ask as U of A has now won 3 straight and they get ready to play at Colorado and then Washington the following week is, are they any good? And to give us some insight on that is CJ Holmes from The Athletic. Always good to have CJ with us. He joins us via Skype from Tucson. All right, I'm going to turn it right over to you. Are they any good?
There's a lot of things to like about this team. I mean, offensively, especially with Khalil Tate in the lineup, I mean, they can score just as well as any team in the country. And defensively, they're playing their best ball of the year. The thing about this team is that we've been saying all year long is they'll only go as far as the defense takes them. And that side of the ball is really starting to step up now. They're, I believe, 9 interceptions lead the country, which is insane, a certain amount of yards they give up at times. But, you know, that defensive side of the ball is starting to come along. And if that happens, then, you know, anything's possible really for this team. They have a winnable game against Colorado coming up on the road. Then they'll have a true test when they come back to Tucson next week against a pretty good Washington team.
When we look at it, CJ, on the defensive side of the football, a lot of rumors, rumblings that Marcel Yates was under pressure and that was getting to the point where they may have even had to make a change. Were they, in fact, considering that? Was his job on the line earlier this season, or is that just fans being discontent?
I believe it was just fans being discontent. Kevin Sumlin, Marcel Yates, they have a relationship that dates all the way back to Texas A&M, despite his struggles. This is only year 2. This is year 2 for Yates under Sumlin. It was Sumlin's second year on campus. Everyone's trying to figure things out. Fans were definitely calling for his job, especially after that Hawaii game. But the narrative's starting to change a little bit after 2 straight. I don't want to call them dominant defensive performances, but that side of the ball has really stepped up. With that said, I think Yates will be safe this season. I can't see them making a change at any point throughout the year. If anything, it'll be something that happens in the offseason.
What has gone right in these three games that they've won? I mean, it's NAU. You expect to win that. But the Texas Tech showing and the game against UCLA, whether UCLA is any good or not, I don't think they are. You saw them in person. It's still a win is a win. So three straight. What's gone right from your view?
It's all defense. NAU game, I mean, like you said, they're expected to win that game. They came out fast. They're up by like three scores at halftime, and everyone knew they were going to win that game. But the true difference in the Texas Tech game and this past week into UCLA has been defense. I mean, that Texas Tech offense was potent. They have one of the best young quarterbacks in the country, and the Arizona defense was able to, you know, really limit them and give Alan Bowerman a lot of trouble. The same thing goes with Dorian Thompson-Robinson for UCLA. I mean, this guy accounted for 7 touchdowns against Washington State, and that team put up 67 points. And, you know, Arizona was able to help them to 17, and that has been the difference for this team. This team will only go as far as the defense will take them, because offensively, that's not the issue. They can score if anyone. But the true problem is the issue has been defensively, and they've really started to turn that around over these past two games.
C.J. Holmes with The Athletic. He joins us from Tucson. He covers the U of A. All right, on the offensive side of the football, they win the other night, take care of business against the Bruins, but they don't have their starting quarterback. They don't have their starting running back. Will both play, either play, against Colorado this Saturday?
Taylor is yet to be seen. You know, he was nicked up against Texas Tech, and someone says he just wasn't looking like himself during practice, and that's why he was held out. But him being the competitor he is, he's still dressed, which I think is pretty admirable. But I am hearing that Khalil Tate will be back against Colorado next week. His injury was just more of a precaution, something that they just didn't want it to get worse. But he's fine. It's nothing major, and I'm hearing he will play next week against Colorado.
CJ, from a big picture view, and I don't know how much you've seen of the Pac-12 South top to bottom, where's U of A fit in as we turn the calendar to October? Are they near the top? Are they a middle? Are they a bottom feeder? Where do you think big picture lies with U of A this season?
Right now, they're just really in the middle of the pack. You know, I still think Oregon's above them. I still think Cal's above them. Arizona State's above them. And I would still say Washington State's ahead of them, even though Washington State's lost 2 in a row now. But I do think Arizona is right there. They'll have a chance to, like I said, they have a winnable game on the road against Colorado this week. And although Arizona hasn't fared very well on the road, I do think that they have enough offensive firepower to come out of Boulder for a win. You know, then they got Washington coming to town for their bye weekend. You know, they're playing Washington at home, and that's going to be a tough game. But like I said, that offense can score if anyone, and if they come ready to play and if that defense is just solid, then they'll have a chance to pull off a huge upset at home. You know, as the season goes on, I do think Arizona has a chance to surprise some people. It's going to be up to them to see how far they want to go.
Before I get you out of here, Arizona State, Arizona, game is in Tempe this year. Right now, you said earlier, Arizona State's a better team. How much better? Touchdown, field goal, 3 touchdowns? How big a gap do you think there is between the two in-state rivals?
I don't think there's that big of a gap. Then again, it's just strange, you know. Arizona State, they've kind of had an up and down year too, especially offensively with that freshman quarterback. They've had their moments, but it's that defense I think that really separates them. They have one of the best defenses in the country, even though they didn't play that well against Colorado a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, Arizona State was able to pull off another big upset this week. And I think that defense is really the difference, and I think that's what gives them the edge over Arizona right now.
How's Kevin Sumlin been for you to deal with year one in Tucson?
Kevin's been great. You know, he's not the most talkative guy, but he answers all of your questions. Always has a smile on his face, and it's you know, he's been good. He's been good. Getting to know him more and more every day. Actually, he has a press conference today at about noon, so when we hop off the phone, I'm gonna shower up and head over to campus.
We'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and your insight as always. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
CJ Holmes with us. From The Athletic in Tucson, U of A, Colorado, big game this coming Saturday. I'm Brad Sismat. And now it's time to bring on board the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, as tonight is the end of week number 4. And not to digress too much, but I have James Conner tonight, and I don't know why I have him. But we have Michael Fabiano with us because I do have Austin Eckler. And I'm going to start there because, look, Mr. Hall of Famer, NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst, I need to know what to do because I'm getting run over with questions about Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler, and I'm sure there's other stuff that may be far more interesting to you today, Michael, than that. I think Ronald Jones is interesting, but let's just start there with Eckler, Gordon, and the dilemma now that is being presented.
So what my take is that when Melvin Gordon is ready to take over a featured role for the Chargers, he's going to get it. And Eckler will move back to sort of being a standalone flex player from a fantasy perspective. And that's what Anthony Lynn has sort of indicated. Whether or not that's this week, maybe that remains to be seen. Maybe it's more of a 50-50 split. But moving forward, as long as Gordon's out there, you know, Austin Eckler's, he's had his best days as a fantasy running back in 2019. And I also believe that since the Chargers have sort of shown already that they're not going to pay Melvin Gordon, and he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, that they're going to give him the ball a lot. They're going to give him the football as much as he can take it. And Eckler's going to play a role. And remember, this is a really good pass-catching running back. And right now, the Chargers are down Mike Williams, Travis Benjamin, Hunter Henry. So, you know, Eckler's still going to have some standalone value. But if you're expecting to put up top five numbers every single week at the position, it's not going to happen. It's very likely that Melvin Gordon is going to end up being a top 10 fantasy running back for the rest of the season.
Michael Fabiano with us, the Hall of Famer, NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst. What strikes you most after 4 weeks?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This week was one of the strangest I can remember because a lot of big names were bad. And I can actually extend that over the course of the season, that wide receiver, because we're not seeing some of the production that we had hoped we would see from some of the big names. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr., you know, comes to mind. DeAndre Hopkins comes to mind. He hasn't been the guy that we had hoped he was going to be. So you're also seeing a little bit of that at running back as well. I mean, Christian McCaffrey has been tremendous, but you know, Todd Gurley coming off a two-touchdown game, he's still not a top 15 running back at this point. So we've seen some big names put up some numbers that we weren't projecting, and it's not as if these guys are ever going to come out of your lineup. But unfortunately for a lot of fantasy owners, the players they drafted highly to lead their teams and sort of help their teams win games week in and week out, you're not getting that level of production after 4 weeks. And of course, it's not in all cases, but there have been a lot of cases where a lot of these big name guys are just not meeting expectations so far.
Michael, what is happening in Kansas City with their receivers from your view?
Yeah, so it's almost impossible to predict because any given week, one of these guys can go off. Mm-hmm. It was Sammy Watkins in week one, you know, and then it was DeMarcus Robinson. And then for a couple of weeks, it was Mecole Hardman. Because Patrick Mahomes is going to find the guy who's open. And, you know, whether it's Watkins or whether it's Hardman or whether it's Robinson in a given week, that's sort of what the scenario is going to be. You know, Sammy Watkins' value rose so much after he went crazy in week one. Since then, he's been mediocre.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't have a game with more than 11 point fantasy points since that big week one explosion. And so it's nice to have shares of your Chiefs in that lineup. But that you're really hoping for that ceiling because the floor could be low, and we saw that with Hardman. And we're also seeing sort of a shared situation with that backfield too. You know, Damian Williams has been out, and LeSean McCoy is the guy who's atop the depth chart. But you look at Darrell Williams, he's getting touches too, and he's outscored LeSean McCoy two straight weeks, this past week, despite the fact that the touches are pretty close. And in fact, Williams had more snaps played this past week. So you're seeing something in an Andy Reid backfield that you typically don't see, and that's a committee scenario. And when Damian Williams does come back, it could be pretty confusing for fantasy owners, and that's too bad because typically Andy Reid's running backs produce really good numbers.
There was a lot of hype, Michael, obviously, and a lot of buildup out here with the arrival of Cliff Kingsbury. I would say after 4 weeks, it's disappointing what's going on with their offense. However, However, I started to see a little bit of a turn on Sunday in terms of using the running back. David Johnson got a ton of touches. That doesn't mean that things are going right over here, but I do think this is a work in progress. They'd get back to me around week 10, and let's see what they have here. On the flip side of it, if you have a tight end, like if you have Tyler Eifert, you have to play tight ends against Cardinals defense. The Cardinals defense is horrendous against tight ends. Six touchdowns through four games.
Yeah, I like this because it makes my job easy.
No,
because
it's
the first
crazy.
Thing I do, last week, my top streaming tight end was Will Disley.
Yep.
Every single week, they are getting just absolutely destroyed by tight ends. In fact, right now, they're giving up almost 28 points per game to the position, and the next worst defense is giving up 19.6.
Jeez.
They are getting crushed. Now, is that going to continue? We'll see. But as you mentioned, Tyler Eifert's going to be a hot name off the waiver wire for people who need a tight end. I think one thing that we're seeing, and I think the fantasy community had sort of, we sort of expected that David Johnson was going to be much better than he was last season in this offense. They run a lot of plays. They're going to utilize him as a pass catcher, which they did prominently yesterday. But it has been a bit disappointing to see Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald over the last couple of weeks be a little less dependable. Start the season, these guys were top 10 in terms of targets. They're still going to get their opportunities because of the nature of the offense. But, you know, Larry Fitz and Kirk, these guys are not week in and week out starters. I think Fitzgerald may be a little bit closer to that. And in terms of Kyler Murray, I mean, his floor has been about 16 points, but he's had one big game.
Yep.
And that was that week one game against the Lions. And since then, he's been kind of average. He's not been terrible, but he's not been great. I like the matchup upcoming against the Cincinnati Bengals. That should be one of those games where Murray can kind of get off in the stat sheets. But from a fantasy standpoint, his numbers are modest at this point.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to hear later today when Cliff Kingsbury meets. Christian Kirk was injured late in the game.
Yes.
And it didn't look good.
Yep.
So that's one to be concerned about. Before I get you out of here, with the Hall of Famer, NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst, Michael Fabiano, let's throw some names that I'm getting thrown at me to run by you. Ronald Jones, yep. Tampa Bay. Where are you at on Ronald Jones?
So every week, the snaps and the touches are a bit volatile between him and Peyton Barber. Clearly, he has a higher ceiling, and I love the way he looked yesterday in a little bit of a homecoming there. The USC product looked great. Worth a look off the waiver wire without question. The bye weeks are coming. We have another week where there's only two teams off, but progressively it's going to get more and more teams. So I think he's someone to pick up as a potential flex starter once we get into the deep bye weeks. And he's also got some upside, and we saw that yesterday, so he's worth a look.
Wayne Gallman with Saquon Barkley. Barkley's what, a month out? Maybe less?
Yeah,
maybe
well,
more?
Who knows? I mean, you know, Barkley's kind of a physical freak, and you know, there's been some reports that suggest that he's going to, you know, beat the timetable that he was originally given. But I'm not saying you're getting two touchdowns from Wayne Gallman every week. But, I mean, at least for 1 week, Wayne Gallman made fantasy owners who have Saquon Barkley forget that they had Saquon on their bench because he put up a Saquon-like stat line. So touches and volume is king in fantasy football. The one problem, though, you got coming up is a very tough matchup against the Minnesota Vikings. So I think Gallman is going to be a flex starter this week, and you're going to have to temper your expectations after what was a big week against the Redskins.
Before I get you out of here, I'm getting a lot about Gardner Minshew, and it's just one of those, he's in Jacksonville, and there was the initial.
Fun to watch, man.
He is, and he's producing.
Yeah, he is. But the thing is, he's producing, but not like outstanding numbers. His numbers are kind of on par with what Kyler's been doing the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He's given you like 16 to 17 points. He's got Carolina this week. It's not a terribly great matchup. It's a road game. So Minshew's not starting in traditional fantasy leagues. He's more of a 2QB league, super flex league play, but he's fun to watch. He did get banged up in that game against the Broncos as well, so that's something to look out for. But He has been fun to watch. He's been good for the league and certainly rosterable in fantasy leagues if you are in 2QB leagues and superflex leagues.
Let's go off that. Appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
All right. Take care, pal.
There's Michael Fabiano with us, NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst, the Hall of Famer, Sports360AZ.com.